Good Saturday afternoon. Boy, the weather outside, boy, just can't get much better than that. About 80, slight breeze. I think I'll turn the show over to Dave today and let him do it, and I'll go outside and do something. Oh, you're listening to Woods and Water, South Carolina on 94.5 WGTK. My name is Roger Metz, and today we're talking about outdoor summer camps with Bo Mongel and the Cobia Stocking and Research Program down at the Waddell Mariculture Center in Bluffton with Al Stokes. They'll both be on the air with us just a little bit later on. Like I said, those first few segments after this one, the second, third segment are pretty full. But I would still like to hear from you. And the final one, or now. I'll put off the calendar events and talk to you if you want to call in, or during that last one if you've got a report. Have you been fishing? Give us a report. Turkey season is almost over, but based on what I've seen and heard, and I've seen literally, they're starting to act like they should have. And I really should have had a turkey this week, but I'll tell you about that in just a minute. Or did you brush the pollen off your hiking boots and hit the trails? Love to hear from you. The numbers are 235-9405 in the Greenville area, 877-235-9405 if you're somewhere else. For once, the weatherman had it right last week, and I made the most of it. I hope you did too. Like I said, I should have been turkey hunting Tuesday morning. I was down in the lower part of the state and at a piece of land that I'll get to hunt this coming fall. And I could have been turkey hunting, but I didn't. I had my daughter with me, and we just went through kind of to get acquainted with it and ride the roads and see. But we pulled into the main gate, got out, unlocked the gate, drove down to the little shack, and not 60 yards down the road was a gobbler in full strut right in the middle of the little dirt road. And I told Taylor, I said, well, this is just fitting. No guns in the car except for the pistol. And so I pulled out the camera, shot a few pictures of him, and I said he's still just strutting away. So I started easing on to him, and he actually started walking towards the car. I said, wait, we might get him with the bumper. But we got within about 30 yards of him, and he kind of really perked up and started looking and just kind of crept off in the woods. And we saw 7 or 8 turkeys while we were down there in the space of about an hour and a half. So maybe, well, there's a couple days left. Maybe somebody can get in the woods. I would like to say I'm going to try, but I make no promises on that one. I did tell a friend of mine where the turkey was, send him the picture. He went down there the next day. The turkey was back in the same place, but when he went in to set up on him, I told him he was there about 10:30 in the morning, and he went in and the turkey was already out. So maybe that boy will make it through to next year and give me another shot at him. The calendar of events. If you want something to do right now today in Greenville, the Project Host 5th Annual Barbecue Cook-Off in downtown Greenville. I don't know how I missed a barbecue cook-off in my own town, but I did. Today, downtown Greenville, Main and Broad Streets, rain or shine. And of course, with the weather outside, it's shining. It's beautiful. Go sample barbecue. There's live music, family fun, all to benefit Project Host. Their motto is using food as a tool to nourish the hungry and train the unemployed. So if you're looking for something to do tonight, right here in Greenville, food, hey, go have at it. South Carolina Wildlife Federation's, now this is for all you amateur photographers out there. The 12th annual wildlife photography contest starts now. 4 categories: Carolina critters, you know, birds, deer, blue herons, alligators, turtles, whatever. One of the categories: scenes of South Carolina. Maybe critters aren't your thing, but you like sunrises, sunsets, dew on a plant. There's another one for you. Kids in nature. Hey, we all know your kids are adorable. Mine are. I'm sure yours are too. So kids, grandkids, neighbors, friends, somebody out enjoying nature. You know, whether they're playing, exploring, hiking, camping, hunting, fishing, whatever, or I love the last line, or just getting dirty. It's great. Pictures to any kids under 18-year-old are eligible. A signed release must accompany photo contest entries that contain pictures of children. The requirements, no more than 2 photographs in each category. They can be color or black and white. digital, you know, JPEGs, GIFs, PNGs. They do have, and I know because a lot of my friends do these digital alterations, they do have a disclaimer. All photographs should accurately reflect the subject matter and the scene as it appeared, and they have a few little things of what's acceptable, what's not acceptable. $15 entry fee. It's a one-time fee. Covers up to 6 photos, 2 per category. You include your name, that sort of thing. So entries must be postmarked no later than 5 o'clock, July 15th. They're going to choose winners by the end of August and first, second, third place in each one. I'm not sure what the awards are. But anyway, for you amateur photographers, and I tell you, I got a pretty good picture of a red-bellied woodpecker hanging off the bottom of a tree limb with a bunch of Spanish moss around him. And I might try to send a couple of those in because it was just one of those things that was there and I was there and the camera worked and it wasn't blurry. So who knows? I might try to enter myself. That's for you. Music on the mountain. Now, normally music in the outdoors, how does that work? But this is the Table Rock State Park. So you can go up there and go hiking or fishing in the pond or whatever, or just go for riding the mountains up in that area. May 10th, 2 p.m. to 4, 6 p.m. And what it is it's just musicians just show up and they play. So you never know exactly who you're going to get. But I know some of the other little events like this I've been to, you usually get some pretty good music. They're having it all through the summertime. There's June, July, August, September, October, November, all the way through. Paris, at Table Rock State Park. Go make a day of it. Go hiking. Get some food. Take a picnic lunch. And then go hear some good music. By the way, from last week. Sorry about this. Just a reminder, the Greer Family Fest is May 2nd and 3rd. And don't forget, there's a fishing tournament on Lake Robinson on the 3rd. You can find all the information at the Chamber website. There's also next weekend, and I meant to mention this at the beginning, there's a fishing rodeo at Draper Wildlife Management Area in York County. And then there's, of course, historic Brattonsville right across the street. Plus, there's a barbecue hog on the hill contest in Chester the same day. So just a reminder from last week. I'm going to try to make the original or the first mention maybe 3 weeks out, 4 weeks out. And then a week or so before, I'm going to go back and just lightly hit the ones that are coming up. And what made me think of that, because there's also a fishing rodeo coming May the 17th in Oconee County. This will be at the Piedmont Forestry Center, Piedmont Nursery Road in Tamasi. You do need to pre-register online or calling 803-737-8483. And this one, you need to bring your own fishing equipment and bait. I think what I'm going to do is maybe even give away a rod and reel if you're going to plan to go this. I see we have somebody on the line. Bo from Clemson. And if you'll put him through. Bo, are you there?
I'm here.
How are you today?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Good. What can I do for you?
I was actually calling in for a segment.
A segment, okay. Oh, Bo, I'm sorry. Now I realize who you are.
That's all right.
Oh, me. Yeah. Okay. You called in just a little bit early. Can I put you back on hold and get through this and come back to you right after the break?
Absolutely.
Okay. I'm sorry. I saw it up there and it wasn't spelled B-O.
I got you. Yeah. No, I didn't want to
be late.
Call in early. Make sure I was on time.
Okay. Well, I appreciate it. If you'll go on hold, I'll be back to you just after that first break.
All right. Sorry.
Thanks.
About that.
Okay. That's my mistake. I should have recognized the name. Let's see. Where was I? The Piedmont Forestry Fishing Rodeo. I think I will probably have, if somebody wants to go to this next week, I'll bring in a Zebco rod and reel. And if you want to go to this fishing rodeo in Oconee, since they don't have fishing equipment, I will give one kid going to that their own rod and reel. So keep waiting. I'll make myself a note of that during the break to bring one next week. Amazingly enough, Big Green Fishing Tournament, Chester State Park, May 17th from 10 a.m. to 2. Another fishing tournament for the little kids. Get them out there. Get them involved. I'll see you on the other side. We'll talk to Bo about the Youth Learning Institute camps out of Clemson. Thank you. And welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. I'll be putting all the calendar events things on the Facebook page until I get my webpage up. It's facebook.com/woodsandwatersc. Log on, check out the posts and pictures, and give the page a like. Now, I would like to welcome Bo Mongel from the Youth Learning Institute camps at Clemson to the air. Bo, thank you for calling in.
Hey, Roger. Appreciate it, man. No problem.
Yes, sir. We paid phone tag for a good bit this week. I know you were in meetings and I was traveling, that sort of thing. But tell us what you do in your capacity with the Youth Learning Institute.
Absolutely. Clemson University's Youth Learning Institute is an institute within the university that develops and operates year-round youth development programs. The Youth Learning Institute is a vital component of Clemson's youth outreach effort and helps fulfill the university's mission of public service. We operate six facilities across the state of South Carolina, and we run five summer camps. Now, we run year-round programs at all those facilities, summer camp being one of those vital components that we operate.
So these camps run year-round?
Yes, sir. We have partnerships with DSS. We have partnerships with DJJ. We have partnerships with many state agencies as well as private organizations that allow us to operate environmental ed programs. We operate behavioral modification programs. We operate, just basic conference center facilities as well. So it's a year-round rental capacity that we have across the state.
You know what I'm learning in this job? It's not a job. What I'm learning doing this show is that there are always layers to everything you touch. And I look at this and I say, oh, summer camps. But here we go year round with this thing. But
it is
summertime and it's parents are getting ready to find a place to put their kids for a week, get them out of the house. Maybe that's the sole reason. Or the kids are like dying, climbing the walls. I want to go to camp this year. I know I always enjoyed going. I mean, what a better place to turn a canoe over, figure out there's an air pocket underneath and give your camp counselors a heart attack.
That's right. That's exactly right. So we have five of those camps that we operate in the summertime. Like I said, we kind of tailor our camps to specific needs and wants of kiddos. And so, just theme wise, we've got a bunch of those. So, I don't know if you want to just start. You want me to just start talking about?
Yes, sir. Let's start off with the 4-H summer camp.
All right, 4-H summer camp is operated at Camp Bob Cooper in Summerton, South Carolina, as well as at Camp Long in Aiken, South Carolina. So the first half of the summer in June will be at Camp Long, and then we'll move the operation to Camp Bob Cooper in July. And that is a traditional summer camp. That's where you tip the canoe over, like you were talking about earlier.
So, great.
That's our traditional summer camp where, the kids are going to participate in arts and crafts. They're going to swim a lot. They've got canoeing, nature hikes, ropes courses, climbing walls, dances, talent shows, all those types of things. So that is your, pretty much when you think of summer camp, that's the typical traditional summer camp experience.
That's where I was. They only had one camp when we went.
Everybody
went to the same camp and you did the same things every week, but it was great. Although I think back when I was going to camp, seems like we did have the little 22s, the little
Absolutely.
Single shot 22s. You had to work the bolt and pull the firing pin.
That's right. That's right. Well, what we've done is we have, created a separate camp, Camp Wildlife, which is shooting sports.
That's the next one on the list.
Yeah, and that camp is again, it's operated at Camp Bob Cooper as well, and that camp is a specialty camp that we geared towards kids that love the outdoors and love shooting sports. And so kids will come to camp and they'll participate in sporting clays, shooting, they'll shoot rifles for target practice, archery, 3D archery. We've got ATVs that they can ride. Of course, we teach them hunting skills and wildlife ecology as well. So it's a very much your outdoor, probably fits your practice your show, Woods and Water, pretty well, your listeners anyway. So Kent Wildlife is a great camp that is, like I said, it's a specialty camp in the area of shooting sports and hunting skills and wildlife ecology. So.
Can I add the 4 and the 6 in my age and come up with 10 and come to one of these camps?
Well, you can maybe. We can talk about that.
I mean, it sounds like so much fun.
Well, it is. And I mean, you know, the thing about summer camp is that it's a great opportunity for kids growing up in this technological age where we are able to provide such a positive experience where kids are safe. It's a nurturing environment. You know, we've got caring, competent adult role models, you know, healthy developmental, trying to provide a healthy developmental experience for those kids is, you know, easy to do in the natural world. And so all of these camps you're going to see have aspects of it, of the natural world in them. Even our technology camp, you know, we Camp Voyager, which is our technology and science-based summer camp.
Right.
That camp is a camp that's operated in Pickens, South Carolina, at our headquarters and education center. I'm very close to Clemson, and it is, you know, that camp, even though those kids are gonna participate in, they're gonna build Lego robotics, they're gonna have Lego robotics competitions, they're gonna race RC cars, remote control cars, what they're gonna do is they're gonna do that stuff, but they're also gonna get outside on the go-kart track. They're gonna race or they're gonna drive go-karts on our go-kart track, and they're gonna do we've got a 250-foot zip line on camp, and so you know, they're gonna learn some of these things on the video games and on the computer games at camp, but then we're gonna apply them outside in the natural environment and see what the difference is. Hey, what's the difference in the video game versus going outside and playing paintball?
Correct.
So,
yeah, there's a lot of kids who are involved in the video game. I think they lose touch with reality. And reality to them is just hitting the reset button. But I think video games have a place, but you have to keep things in perspective too, and getting them out and outside. And look, there's a whole world out here besides this. I think that's wonderful. I see the paintball on here, and I notice there's no shooting each other on the Camp Wildlife one.
Well, that's right. That's very intentional that we do not play paintball during Camp Wildlife. So if you're going to camp for Camp Wildlife, if you want to learn about shooting sports and shooting shotguns and shooting rifles and air rifles, again, that's a progression too, where we start with the air rifles and
right.
then move up to the real guns. But you are that is a good observation. That's very intentional.
Okay.
We are only going to shoot each other with paint paint when it's not when it's a camp that doesn't have anything to do with firearms.
That's good.
You know.
The next one, Camp Hannon.
That, you know, Camp Hannon is actually our newest summer camp.
Okay.
We developed that summer camp about 6 years ago, and it is our adventure camp. So if you are, it's based out of Sunset, South Carolina.
Right.
A lot of people may or may not know where that is, but that's up Highway 178. In the upstate there.
Right.
So it is based out of that camp and they will basically spend 6 days going on adventures from Camp Hannon. So they'll be based in camp. We've got some beautiful dorms there. They'll spend the night there, but every day they're gonna get up and head out on a hike, you know. They're gonna go rock climbing in Pisgah. They might go to mountain biking in the area, whitewater rafting, and much more. So that is our true outdoor adventure camp. That one kind of also for a little bit older age group. All of our camps are from anywhere from the age of 8 to 17, depending on the camp you pick.
Okay.
So we also have a mini camp for a little younger kids, 7 to 9 years old. And that's a shortened camp at Camp Bob Cooper. So this adventure camp, that's our outdoor adventure camp where you're going to really get immersed in the outdoor world and you're climbing rock and you are, you know, hiking and all that kind of good stuff. So
I saw the mini camp for the younger kids, and I'll see also see on Camp Hannon you have an expeditions, which is a primitive camping.
That's right.
Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Sure. So those are kind of the two opposites. You know, mini camp, Camp Bob Kubrick, that's going to be 7 to 9 year olds, shortened week. It's only a 3-night experience. So those kiddos that are ready to try camping out, or try camp, but not quite, usually it's the parents aren't quite ready for their kiddo to go for the whole week.
Okay.
So they go to mini camp for a couple of days and try it out.
Okay.
And then next year they can go to a regular camp.
Regular camp.
That's right. But, yeah, the excursions, they head out. What we do with our adventure excursions is, meet a camp hander on that first day. We'll spend a day or two getting some basic skills down for, setting up tents and, you know, proper hiking techniques and, all those kinds of things. And then we'll, head out on the trail and, they'll do some primitive camping for a couple of nights and they'll bike. They'll hike around, camping out, then they'll bike around, and they'll camp out along the way. So it's really a 10-day camp. It's really about a 7-day excursion where they are out, camping out in the wilderness. And they'll touch base back at camp along the way every so often as well. So.
And then if you have salt water in your veins, you have Camp Seawee.
I tell you, man, Camp Seawee is a 44-acre piece of property that is on the Intracoastal Waterway in the Francis Marion National Forest. So it's one of the most special places that any of South Carolinians might not know about. Allendale is one of the most pristine environments we have from a marine resources standpoint. And so down there at Camp Seawee in Allendale, you've got a marine science based camp where kids counselors are doing everything they can to raise the next generation of marine biologists. And so you're talking about crabbing and cast netting and salt marsh studies where they get in the salt marsh and play in that wonderful fluff mud and find out how it's not quite such good mud to walk in. We'll take them out to Capers Island to do a barrier island beach study. They'll spend all day out there, kayaking, tubing, swimming, of course, in that salt water. We also take the kids to the water park in Charleston, and then also the aquarium, the Charleston Aquarium. So it's a really, really neat camp. They will also be exposed to environmental education through the Center for Birds of Prey and the Seawee Environmental Education Center as well. So,
well, look, I appreciate you being on. How do they get a hold of you real quick?
www.ylicamp.com or just ylicamp.com.
Well, look, if you have a 40-something-year-old man show up for camp 1 week, treat him nicely.
Well, we'll have to make sure that we do the appropriate screening and background checks and all that. But other than that, yeah, that's fine.
Thanks, Bo. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. That last segment was a lot of information. I will post those links on the Facebook page. I'll talk about those camps again next week in case, but the website is ylicamps.com. That's Youth Learning Institute Camps at Clemson. That was Teacher Teacher by 38 Special. And in conjunction with that, I'd like to welcome to the air Al Stokes. Al is the man in charge of the Waddell Mariculture Center down in Bluffton, South Carolina. And Al, you taught me a lot this week.
Well, good afternoon. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. I want to tell you again how much we enjoyed being down there. You taking your time to take us through that whole facility, showing us the hiking trails, extending us the house and all. It was wonderful. I can't thank you enough for that.
Well, it was our pleasure.
Okay, so you are the man in charge at the Waddell Mariculture Facility. That's a field experiment station of the Department of Natural Resources in Bluffton, South Carolina. I saw the news release that said, fishermen, cobia season's coming. We're doing a DNA sampling program. clip your fins or give us your skeletons. And I said, hot dog, here's something for fishermen. They raise the fish there. They dump the fish in the river. We catch them. Everything's great. But Waddell is a lot more than that.
Oh, yeah, we do so much more than that. We develop technologies for seafood production, developing species that can be farm-raised. These are all saltwater species. We've been a leader in shrimp production over the years. As you know, we import 91% of our seafood in the United States, and it's, you know, we need to develop those new technologies for developing more sustainable types and environmentally friendly types of seafood farming. The other thing that we do is develop those tools for rebuilding wild fish populations that are important to the state of South Carolina. And right now we're working on the saltwater striped bass, spotted sea trout, red drum, and cobia. And cobia right now are just becoming in season. I got reports today that they've been seeing some fish offshore. So everybody's all excited about cobia.
May is the month for cobia.
April, May, late April, early May, they start picking up their first fish, yeah.
Okay. All right, being as it's that time and you want these fins for DNA, tell us the whole process. And I know I've talked to you. We're going to have you back on to talk about the mariculture, which is saltwater farming that we too talked about just recently. But since this is cobia, let's talk cobia. Now, tell us the program at Waddell that brings us to releasing cobia into Port Royal Sound and the Broad River.
Well, a little more than 10 years ago, there was a tremendous amount of interest in developing this particular species as to be a farmed fish, one that could be grown in coastal waters for seafood. The interest, we applied for a grant with other agencies and universities, and we received the role of developing hatchery techniques for farming these fish. And it was a great species to work with, and also because Beaufort County has about 85% of the cobia that are caught in the states right in this area. So we had plenty of broodstock in the area to take, you know, our adults from. And we did develop those tools to spawn cobia. We were able to produce large numbers. We sent them to the other universities and research facilities, and then we grew some fish on our own. A byproduct to the food production research is we had fish that we had to do something with. And since the recreational fishermen were so interested in this particular fish, we started tagging these fish for release. Over the years, we decided that, you know, putting small plastic tags in fish was laborious and it was also expensive. And our geneticists with our agency and others developed techniques to track these populations using DNA. So we're now are funded to do some additional research looking at rebuilding or building certain year classes of cobia population, releasing them into the wild, and then tracking them using DNA.
Which is amazing.
Yes, and it's a wonderful tool because we can look at our contribution to the wild fish population. We can also help us get an estimate on how well these populations are doing, looking at these returns. We can get age information, so we know the age structure within a population. We can determine sex. It's a wonderful tool because your DNA doesn't fall off.
That's right. And it doesn't grow barnacles and that sort of thing, or where you can't read the numbers and all that.
That's right.
When I was down there, you were telling me about changing out the parents so you have specific DNA lines for specific years.
Yes, we work with recreational fishermen. We'll have a tournament in a couple of weeks, and they will go out and catch fish. We'll have three chase boats. So if when they catch an adult fish, we will recover that fish, bring it to the Mariculture Center, and put it into maturation for spawning. We only use a set of parents 1 year, and then we can tag them using, we have the DNA samples, but we can also use small electronic tags like you would tag your dog to identify this fish, and we can release it back in the wild. And we only use those parents 1 year. If we ever recover them the second year, we will not use them. So we'll have a genetic profile that changes from year to year. So when we get DNA samples in, we can tell what year those fish were released and where they were released based on DNA.
And now those tournament fishermen, they can either keep those cobia or turn them over to you. And what you told me is the ones that turn them over to you get more points in the tournament?
Right. It's a point tournament, and if you donate the fish, you get more points. So, yeah, it's an incentive for those fishermen to give us those fish.
Now, cobia hatch, and you told me, I believe, within 24 hours, they will hatch into those little tiny little things. In 72 hours, they are ready to eat food.
Right. We take the parents will put them into large tanks, and they will condition to spawn based on ambient water temperature and light that we'll arrange to match the season. It's an indoor system. And those fish will spawn. A female on one spawn can release more than 1 million eggs. And she can spawn every 3 to 4 days from a few hundred thousand to a million or more. And she can probably spawn, they believe, in the wild for about 30 to 45 days. So they can produce a lot of eggs.
That's a lot of eggs.
We can, one hatch may give us over a million larvae.
And you take those larvae and you put them in tanks. You raise them. And you release them at what size? Was it six inches?
They hatch in 24 hours. They're ready to go on live food. So we prepare ponds by putting organic fertilizers in there, stimulating phytoplankton production, get a good population of zooplankton, live food for these cobia. We introduce them to the ponds, and then we monitor those fish. And within 6 weeks, we have almost a six-inch fish. And then we can take those fish and release them back into the wild.
And you told me they will put on 15, they can put on up to 15 pounds in their first year.
That's correct. And that's why the original research was done. This fish is an excellent culture fish because it can reach 15 pounds in 1 year and go to market, where if our coastal species, red drum, for example, it may get only 1 pound in 1 year. Very fast growers.
And very fun to catch. I've yet to catch a cobia. A lot of people tell me they're fun. One of these days, I have a guide friend in Charleston who goes down to the Broad River every year for about a week, and he keeps telling me to come down. I never get down. I'm going to have to go down there and do that 1 year.
It's a blast. This is an amazing fish, and they eat everything. They'll eat sharks. They'll eat just about any fish. They love crustaceans. They'll eat horseshoe crabs. They'll eat stingrays. I mean, they're an aggressive predator. And in fact, some fishermen actually look for large sharks on the surface and will fish behind those.
Cobia trail them looking for scraps.
Cobia will trail them looking for scraps.
Okay, if an angler is coming down to cobia fish, what does he need to do as far as the research project for you goes?
If they catch a fish, they can call us at the Mariculture Center, and they can drop the carcass off. We picked up between 300 and 500 carcasses a year to get information on age and get DNA samples, look at stomach contents and egg production. So fishermen in our community here are well aware of our program, where we put out coolers and small freezers at some of the docks, and if they catch a fish, they'll tag it and put it in the cooler for us. But if someone's just visiting here, they can call us and we'll meet them, or they can come to the Mariculture Center. I'll give them a tour if they'll bring me a carcass.
Oh, there you go. And let me tell you, folks, a tour is great. Now, you don't have regularly scheduled tours. They're given as you have time available.
Right.
So they need to call first, and you are the man to call. We're running up close to a break here. I want to thank you for coming on. I will be back in touch with you because we have a lot more to cover on Waddell and what all it does, food production, farming, seafood. You also have the spotted sea trout, the redfish, and the saltwater stripers you stock.
That's right.
What's the number down there if they want to call? And they're going to be in Hilton Head this summer. What's the number?
843-837-3795.
Al, I really appreciate you calling in. I especially appreciate the welcome you gave my daughter and I, and I will talk to you soon. And welcome back to the final segment of this week's Woods and Waters SC. The number to call in is 877-235-9405. Lots of information today. I apologize if it was a lot. I probably could do a month straight on Waddell. I won't do that to you. I'm going to break it up over the summer, the fall, because they do, they stock during different times of the year. They do. I know they were finishing up a federal grant on a brown water farming operation. The first tanks of the building that we were in were shrimp, and they filtered the brown water, which is, I believe it was bacteria. He had a name for it, and I can't recall the name at the moment. They filtered it, went through into a tank of tilapia, and they filtered it, used what they needed, and then went into a tank of redfish. Now, they harvested three times, the tilapia twice, and the redfish once. And when I was down there, when we were leaving Wednesday morning, they were harvesting the last of all three, and they were going to take it to market, and they have an agreement with seafood markets and restaurants to buy it. They actually don't buy it because it was a federal grant. They give the shrimp and the tilapia and the redfish to these seafood buyers. They sell it. They give it to the restaurants. The restaurants are fully disclosed how this was raised, an experimental project, and then the patrons, the diners, rate the product as they leave, and that's how they, but they had people from Brazil, Chile, I want to say Japan, all there this spring looking at this setup they had to see if it was viable to take back to their countries and raise seafood there. Very interesting, very beautiful place. We got there Tuesday afternoon, spent 3 hours with Al. We did a PowerPoint presentation on food production, world food, fish stocks, population, that sort of thing. Went and toured the Mariculture Center, both the outside facilities and the inside. They have enormous ponds. If you go to Google Earth, Google Bluffton, or Google the Waddell Mariculture Center, it will take you to it. They have 26 outside ponds plus the buildings and the tanks. And inside were the tanks of redfish and spotted sea trout. We didn't see any stripers while we were there. And then the cobia. And he was feeding, of course, when you throw fish food out there, it's just a froth at the top of the water. And they had a tank full of breeder redfish, and he kept throwing shrimp in there. And boy, I tell you, seeing a 25, and I've caught them that big and shallow water catching them big. But anyway, to be that close to one, you know, 5 feet away, when it comes up from the bottom of this tank and grabs a shrimp and get your blood flowing, especially if you're a fisherman. But for those families who are going to be down in Hilton Head this summer, or Beaufort, South Carolina, Savannah, Georgia, any of those places, you know, Waddell is right there. It's about 6 miles before you go on to Hilton Head Island. It's Sawmill Creek Road. The number is 843-837-3795. Al's email address is stokesa@dnr.sc.gov. Just a wonderful gentleman. Loves to talk about what he does. I understand he has a son at Clemson, and I believe the son will be doing an internship at Waddell this summer. They do offer those summer internships. It's a working internship. You will get dirty, you will get wet, and that sort of thing. But if you're a college student thinking about marine biology, that sort of thing, that's the place to go to look. There's a heritage preserve. I think it's Victoria Bluffs Heritage Preserve right next to Waddell. Waddell has a maritime forest trail. Al put us on that, and we walked for probably an hour and a half through a maritime forest, which is, you know, the Spanish moss, the big pines, the palms. Just a great time. Lots of birds. Squirrels. We saw deer. We saw deer on the road. We didn't see deer on the trail. You remember I was with a 10-year-old girl and her mouth never stops moving. So it's very interesting to go with her anywhere. But we didn't see any deer. We did see a lot of other things. Had a wonderful time. If your family's going to be down there, this is an educational thing you can work in during family vacation that will just, it's just an eye-opener. I learned so much. When I went down there, I thought, oh, this is about raising fish, dumping in the water, and I can go catch them. But it's a lot more than that. They operate a almost totally off of license revenues, fishing license revenues. They do have a 501c3 set up by the local community there in Bluffton and Beaufort that takes care of some of the expenses they have there. I know he had a pump go down and they had money in their little fund, and rather than having to go to the state and get it appropriated, the community paid to keep it going. Great thing to do. I wanted to get to during the calendar events. I ran out of time and all there. The Lily Fest. As you know, over in Lansford Canal State Park, over in Catawba, South Carolina, we have spider lilies. Now, it is one of the only places to have this large a population of spider lilies in the world. It's on the Catawba River. It's a short walk down to the historic canal, the Lansford Canal. If you have a kayak or a canoe, there are smallmouth bass in there. It's one of those places that is just beautiful this time of the year when those lilies start blooming. So you can contact the Lansford Canal State Park. I don't have the telephone number here. I've got the website, which is, you know, South Carolina State Parks. They're doing this May 18th from 12 to 5, but depending on the bloom and all, you could go before or after. So I'd encourage you to call the state park, find out if they're blooming, and then go and see them. That's just one of those things. I'll remind you of it next time around. Wow, a lot of information. Fishing is great right now. I don't care where you are and what you're going for. I've been trout fishing. I did not go red fishing. I wanted to go while I was down in Charleston, didn't go. I may have to go back here in the next week or so. I know that sounds good. You have to go back to the coast to fish. I had a text this morning or this afternoon before the show came on. A friend of mine in Charleston want me to drive down tonight and go to the Gulf Stream in the morning because the dolphin bite's going off. But I've already scheduled with another friend to go up to the mountains trout fishing tomorrow afternoon. So I was almost like I need a clone. I'm lending out some tackle tonight to a group of college kids who are going down to Hunting Island State Park. And I got in a little bit of crappie fishing that had been Thursday afternoon. Managed to find some legal fish, which is 8 inches now on minnows. But I found the nursery, you know, the little 6-inch fish. I pulled out my fly rod and just absolutely wore them out. It was so much fun. I just knocked my thing off on the floor. So much fun. That fly came from Low Country Fly Shop down in Charleston, Mount Pleasant. When I was down there, of course, I went by there, as I always do. I needed some, last year I left my fly rod in the car when I needed it offshore, and those little schoolie dolphins were all around the boat, and I haven't heard the end of it. Every time this friend of mine calls me, hey, where's the fly rod at? So, you know, I picked up a few flies with that. Some woolly boogers were up here in the mountains. They had it. And the cool thing about it is they had the atmosphere. You know, we were standing there, Scotty Davis and I and some other guys, and there were people coming in to buy tying supplies by Metz. Same spelling, M-E-T-Z, but I'm still trying to find a relationship to that bunch. I'd like to get to know them better. All the rods and reels you need, Sage, Winston, Hardy, Nautilus, Tibor, fish pond bag, closed by flood tide, but the atmosphere. We were standing there talking, and these two elderly gentlemen came in with their wives, and I could tell the wives kind of followed the guys in, and we started talking to them, and they were from Maryland and one was Virginia, and they'd been fishing together for a long time, and they were down vacationing, going on a fishing trip the next day and all. You don't get that in just every shop you go into. So if you need your fly tying, need your fly fishing gear, stop in the next time you're down in Mount Pleasant or call them. Low Country Fly Shop, 843-388-5337. And when you call them, remember to say you heard about them here on Woods and Water, South Carolina. Like I said, the fishing, and Scotty also said that the stripers are really, really biting on Lake Murray right now. He was up there last week. And you know when a fly fisherman can catch fish that you throw in a soft plastic or live bait, it's going to be even get better. So a lot of times I'll reference the fly fishing because if we can catch them, anybody else can catch them. Wow. Did you see an 805-pound Mako shark was caught off of Pensacola Beach? Now, not to scare you beachgoers or anything, because I'm sure these guys, these serious shark fishermen, they take their kayaks and they go drop the line off several hundred yards offshore. But an 805-pound Mako caught off Pensacola Beach, that's a big fish. It's got a picture here. This is from the Outdoor Press Room, and it's in a – looks like a full-size pickup truck, maybe a three-quarter-size pickup truck. And the shark's tail is – I mean, like two-thirds of the way back, it's tied off to the side. It's just a huge thing. It's a really big shark. I'd love to know how long it took him to get him in. I didn't get to this last week. Scana, parent company of SCENG, has donated $100,000 to fill in a gap on the Palmetto Trail down on the Watery River, the Watery Passage. When they got that, the trestle couldn't be redecked, so the trail went down to the ground. And if you've ever been in the Watery floodplain, you know, a lot of times it's flooded. You can't get through there. SCANA's donated $100,000. They're going to build a new bridge for the Palmetto Trail, which will get it across Watery. The Palmetto Trail, if you don't know, is supposed to be about 500 miles long. They've got about 350 of it. A lot of it's up here in the upstate. It ends in Allendale at the Buck Hall Recreation Facility. This is just a connecting part. You know, they've got goals to get the rest of it made, but I'm going to go hike some of that as soon as I get a chance. QDMA has announced their classic is going to be in Athens, Georgia, July 24th, 27th. Go to their website. Look at some of the things they're going to be doing there. And when I go off, I always like to do these little newspapers. And it says, two South Carolina Highway Patrolmen were conducting speed enforcements on Highway 24 in Beaufort. They got a radar device lock, and it went from 300 miles an hour and climbing. It was from a U.S. Marine Corps F-18 Super Hornet. Got back, wrote a nasty letter to the Marine Corps. Says, thank you for your letter. You may be interested to know that the tactical computer in the FA-18 Hornet had detected the presence of and subsequently locked onto your hostile radar equipment. Luckily, the pilot realized the situation. He suggests that you cover your mouths when swearing at them, since the video system of these jets are very high-tech. Sergeant Johnson, the officer holding the radar gun, needs the snap fixed on his holster. That came out of the dude. Here's the music. I hope you get outside this week. Be careful when you do it. Take the back roads. Don't forget the camera. And tune in again next Saturday. Have a good one.